This is a familiar phrase, isn't it? I'm going for a walk to clear my head. But do you ever wonder what that simple act of walking is giving to you or doing for you? Yep, it's good for our physical health, but walking also has neurological and emotional effects. Author Jono Lenin describes it as perfect motion, and that's the title of his book. Jono Lenin is a curator at the National Museum of Australia, and he's been an international cross-country skier, a mountain guide, and he's worked for Médecins Sans Frontières, and he's walked several thousand kilometres through the Himalayas, so he knows about being on his feet. Jono, welcome to Life Matters.
Oh, great to be with you, Hilary.
Has getting around on foot always held a fascination for you?
Well, I suppose it goes right back to when I was a little over 1 year old. I mean, we all have that experience of moving up onto 2 feet. And I can remember when my older son, Liam, took those first steps. I mean, the absolute joy and elation when he had that. So it's deeply coded with us. But, I have memories of when I was young in Northern Ireland, in Belfast, and walking with my family. And so there's not just that, the elation of discovery around that, but the elation of being together with family and friends.
And those walks, those early walks with your family, are really linked to learning too, aren't they? Because they were investigative, exploratory walks where you took your time and looked around.
That's right, yeah. I remember those walks very fondly because my mum used to take us every Saturday and Sunday on walks out in West Belfast and a little bit into the countryside. And I remember these old cobbled roads with these thick hedges on either side. And my brothers and my sister and I, we would, they were walks of discovery. You know, we were going slow. We were having fun. We were talking. We were being together. And at the same time, we were really engaging with the environment.
One of the things I found really interesting about your book was how you explore walking, not just as a physical and a physiological process, but as a symbolic activity. And I wonder if you'd tell us about the decision you made to take a very, very long walk. What happened in your life that led you to that path?
Well, that's, almost 30 years ago, my younger brother tragically died in a boating accident in Canada. And, that initiated a couple of years of really immersion in drugs and booze and failed relationships for me. And what brought me out of that was a vision from my childhood, leading back to those walks in Belfast. And on Saturdays, my mom and my brothers and sister and I would walk down to the library and get our books for the week. And I would usually choose children's mystery. And then I would go over to the mountaineering section. And those books were very popular and written in the 1970s. And in the middle of them, there would be these color plates. And I remember opening it up and looking at these men and women in brightly colored down jackets in these incredibly steep environments, all surrounded by titanium white snow and this depthless blue sky. And it was just completely the opposite of the grayness of Civil War Belfast that I grew up in. And so the Himalayas became a dream for me. And, after a couple of bad years after Gareth's death, that vision came back to me and I decided that I wanted to go to the Himalayas. And I did. And one season of trekking there ended up being 8 years. And I was rewarded. I was rewarded with beauty, with friendship, with a faith in humanity again. And the culmination of that time there was a 2,700-kilometer solo trek across the Western Himalayas.
And you write about how your feelings and your thoughts really changed across the course of that. Can you contrast how you were feeling at the start with what you came away with at the end?
When I started that walk, I still wasn't really in touch with my grief, with an understanding of the loss that Gareth's passing had on me. And, it's almost like I was suffering from PTSD or something. I wasn't in touch with that. And during the process of the walk, which was almost 5 months and, 30, 40 kilometers every day of just walking and walking and walking, the walking became a meditation. And in that meditation, Gareth kept coming back to me. And so in Hinduism and Buddhism, there's a concept called darshan, where you actually view a sacred object from all different types of angles and perspectives. And that was what was happening with me and Gareth on that walk. And in the process of that, I kind of I kind of came to understand what his loss meant to me. And at the end of the walk, I felt stronger, but not just physically, but emotionally and psychologically. And I suppose that was the catalyst for me to investigate that link between walking and thinking and creativity.
And what did you find about what neuroscience tells us about that link?
Well, the neuroscience is related to the evolution. If you think about it, 4 million years ago, when our very earliest human ancestors started to walk, what that did was it freed up what had been forepaws, and then they became hands, and those hands became mediums through which we could alter our immediate environment by making tools. And over millions of years, those tools became more specific. So we became very good at manipulating raw materials. And then, so there's a link right there between creativity and the fact that we stood up on two legs. And then when you think about 2.5, 3 million years ago, hominids got a real appetite for protein. And this translated into long-range hunting techniques. And when you're in a long-range hunt, you have a group of men and women with you, and you're pursuing a particular animal. Now, the best hunters are actually extremely creative individuals. They have to be able to come outside of their body. They have to be able to project into the animal in a way and understand where that animal is going to be in 10 minutes or half an hour. And they also have to understand where their co-hunters are going to be at any particular time. So that, again, we're talking hundreds of thousands or millions of years of those long-range hunting scenarios actually started to change the neurochemistry, neuroelectricity, and neurophysiology in our brains.
So does that mean that when we stood upright, we were able to learn more things because more neural connections were being formed more quickly?
Oh, that's a good question, Hillary. I don't know of any research on that particular area. My feeling would be yes. You know, when hands became those mediums to initiate creativity, yeah, you know, cognition definitely changed. And so neural connections would have been directed towards that creativity.
And tell us a little bit about flow states, John O'Lanine. How does walking relate to the flow state, and what effect does it have on our ability to learn?
Yeah, flow state is really important. We talk about flow all the time in sports and actually in business. What happens in flow is that your prefrontal cortex, which is the area of the brain that's really, really the area of higher cognitive functions, it's the area of the brain that makes you do things, takes the information from all over the mind and the body. And if you shut the prefrontal cortex down, and this is what happens when you go into a flow state, it starts to reduce its activity. You actually start to lose your sense of self. And why is that? It's because we approach life, we approach problems in a consistent way over and over and over again. For example, I mean, the way you put your key in the ignition, the way you hang out the laundry, the way you drink your coffee, those are actually the millions of little decisions that define Hillary or Jono. Now, when the prefrontal cortex starts to slow down, then you start to lose that sense of self. And this is really important in creativity, because if we want to approach a problem in a new way, we've got to get rid of Jono. We've got to get rid of Hillary. And the flow state actually initiates that. And that's why so many artists, writers, thinkers, entrepreneurs, philosophers, scientists talk about having their best ideas when they've gone for a walk.
Does it have to be a brisk walk, though? Can it just be a gentle stroll? Is there any research on that?
No, it doesn't have to be a brisk walk at all. The key is that the activity has to be something that you have a certain amount of mastery over, but can still challenge you. So you can go for a very slow walk on maybe unstable terrain, so that would increase its challenge, and you would definitely reach a flow state. And in fact, you know, walking meditation, which is promoted by the great Vietnamese monk Thich Nhat Hanh, I mean, that can definitely bring you to a flow state. And that's about as slow as you can go walking.
Jono Lenine is our guest. He's an author and the book is called Perfect Motion, How Walking Makes Us Wiser. And Jono, you tell this great story about how walking is a big part of the hero's journey, that idea of the individual's path to realize, to self-realization. It's a big cultural story that we've inherited. And you experienced something like this while working in rebel-held territory in Sierra Leone. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah. Well, I had the absolute privilege of working with Médecins Sans Frontières for about 5 years, and lots of crazy things happened during that time. But one of the events that really stands out was me and my team were going to start up a clinic in a rebel-held town in Sierra Leone during the civil war there. And when I look back on that situation, the different stages of that walk, you know, going across the bridge to this town and negotiating with child soldiers, moving into the town and then negotiating with Nigerian peacekeepers, and moving closer to the center, to the place where we were going to hold the clinic, and again holding more negotiations with the rebel commander. All of those stages actually relate to how Joseph Campbell, the great American mythologist, describes his monomyth, the hero's journey. That's the same story that we tap into almost every day, you know, with Star Wars, with Indiana Jones, with the video games. And we still love a good story. And the one story that we can all connect with, the one story that becomes a narrative framework for almost every other story, whether it's a love story or a rags-to-riches tale or a comedy, is that journey story. And that's actually what was happening to us when we were moving towards that clinic in Sierra Leone.
I think often about how I love walking, but walking is so different for so many people these days. It often happens on city streets. It doesn't happen on these beautiful savanna landscapes where we first learnt to walk. Do you think it's still important to maintain walking in a modern life, even if it is on city streets, Jono?
Oh, I definitely do. I think walking is one of those intrinsic activities that makes us human. And let's face it, I mean, today we're still exploring, we're still understanding the world on 2 feet. You know, maybe it's less than we did 25 years ago, 50 years ago, but yeah, it still happens every day. And my hope is that, you know, through the book, people will understand that walking is much more than just 10,000 steps a day. It's about coming into contact with your creativity, with your adaptability, with what it is to be Homo sapiens. It's about giving people another reason to get out there and appreciate this activity that we're all built for.
I love the story you told about doing a walk with your children and getting them involved and cutting through that preteen surliness to involve them in your joy of walking. Jono, it's been a pleasure to chat today. I hope we can get more people walking more often. Thank you for coming on to Life Matters.
No, my pleasure, Hilary. Thanks a lot.
Jono Lenine, the author of Perfect Motion, How Walking Makes Us Wiser. I would have put happier in that subtitle too, but, you know, each to their own.